Miss Katie wasn't even supposed to sing this morning. It's amazing how God puts things together. All you need for me is to just be still. What a great thought. This morning, hopefully you can see the televisions. I am going to be doing a slide presentation. Pastor does not often ask me to preach on particular subjects when he's gone. Normally he gives me a blanket and just says, you know, whatever you feel led of the Lord to preach, I'd like you to preach. But this time, he specifically said, I want you to talk about technology and in particular social media. And so throughout the course of the day today, that is the focus of my messages, which I have entitled Unplugged. But let me start off by saying this. I want you to understand I am a tech guy. I am the guy who loves technology, electronics, all kinds of cool gadgets. I do like social media. I am not on it hardly at all, just for lack of time. But I do like social media. I think there's some fantastic uses for it. So I am prefacing with two disclaimers today before I start the message. Number one, I am not against it. Please understand that as I speak, it's not speaking as if I can't stand it. I love it, and I'm for it. I think it can be used properly. So disclaimer number one is that I am not against technology. Disclaimer number two, throughout the course of the message, specifically this morning, but even tonight, many of the quotes, phrases, statistics, and facts that I am using, I amassed from a wide variety of professors, of educators, of technology consultants, of psychologists. And at the end of the service tonight, I do have a credit slide because we do post things on live stream. I want to make sure I do give credit where credit is due. There's no way to list them all. But I did list specifically five or six of the individuals that had the greatest impact on, especially this morning's message with several of the slides. So I want you to understand I am not against technology and social media, and most of this material does come from other people. We are going to be in 1 Kings chapter 19 in just a few moments, but before I get there, I want you to go on a walk with me, not literally, but in your mind. I want you to walk with me down just a street in any town, any city, but something a little bit bigger than Latrobe, Pennsylvania, usually. As we walk down that town, or down the street in that town, I want you to envision, maybe we come across a building that looks a little something. I just died. There it is. Dead spot. We come across a building that looks a little bit something like this. Now, it's not going to be this building. This is actually, if I am not mistaken, it is just a building at a university. But something similar to this, many companies have. Wow, this is going to drive me crazy. Does it keep cutting out there, too? Perfect. Turn this on for me. At least I have both. Many companies, we'll just get rid of that completely. How's that? Many companies have buildings just like this. And with buildings just like this, we're going to walk inside. Now, normally, if you're on this walk going to this particular place with me, you would not even get through the front doors unless you're an employee of this company. However, you're on a walk with me today, and I'm going to get you inside. So we're going to walk inside, and we're going to just tiptoe right past security. Even though there's a bunch of big, burly guys with lots of weapons hanging all over them, we're going to get past security, and we're going to start walking down a hallway that looks a little bit something like this. And down this big, beautiful hallway, you can see gorgeous offices, nice glass walls, beautiful facilities. This is some money being represented by this building and this company. But at the end of this hallway, we come to a door that's a solid wood door. You can't see inside the room. You can't get inside the room. As a matter of fact, were you not with me today, you would never get past the biometric security lock. However, you're with me. And so I'm going to get you past the biometric security lock, and we're going to sneak inside this room. Now, at this time, there's no employees working, so the room is empty. But I want you to see what it looks like just a little bit inside that room. The room looks a little something like this. And there are rooms like this, thousands of them, all across the world. This room is a very particular room for companies such as technology companies, news companies, any social media company, this room is called a control room. And the purpose of this room, there is one particular purpose of this room. This room is designed to control something very particular. In the world today, there are roughly 2.5 billion social media networking users. As a matter of fact, 81% of Americans have social media accounts. There are over 1,100 different social media apps available. Technology, however, is not some big blue sky meant to be able to take you in any direction you want to go. In these control rooms, like the ones I just showed you, its technology is designed to drive you into a very particular direction. We think of technology as endless possibilities. However, thousands of rooms like this are meant not just in social media. Again, I want to emphasize this is not just social media. This is movies and music and any type of media, games, many games, television shows. They're all spending billions and billions of dollars to achieve their market share of the most valuable resource they can get their hands on. Anybody have a clue what that valuable resource is? What's that? Your attention. They're all geared to grab your attention. All of technology is driven to try and capture you. This next slide I'm going to show you, this is an average work day throughout three different time periods this century. The white space at the end of the workday is going to be how much free time that you have. If you look through this slide, we have on an average workday how much time we sleep, how much time we work, and how long it takes to commute back and forth to work. And then survival. Survival is things like eating. Some of us have to eat to survive. Some of you may not go through that. Some of us spend a lot more time on it than others. We won't go there. This is hygiene, brushing your teeth, showering, taking care of yourself. This is mothers taking care of their children. Survival times on average. This is average time. Which leaves this white space at the end of a day. This white space is very important to us as individuals because this white space is what makes us really who we are. This white space is what we spend our time doing, our hobbies, building relationships, really thinking about our lives and what we've accomplished. This is our time to be creative and inventive. This is the time that we reflect on our lives and the meaning that we've had or plan to have with our lives. It is said that when we look back at our lives from our deathbed, this white space is what we will be looking for. It's not the rest of it. It is the white space and the moments that happen there where life happens. This next slide I'm going to show you shows you the amount of screen time in those same three periods taking up our white space. This is just screen time, not including anything else. The white space that makes us who we are, that makes us the individuals that we are, in this 10-year span has gone from about 2 hours and 45 minutes to about 13. Now you know why this time is so coveted. Why these companies want that red screen time. Because if they can capture your attention during that red time, the more of it they get, the more product that they have, and that's you. We have gone from being consumers to being products for companies. This red space is where companies make money. And so they go after it in fury. They are fierce to get your attention. By the way, that doesn't even count. You've given up 2.5 hours on average of life to watch television, to watch movies, to stare at your cell phone, to grab the iPad and play apps. 2.5 hours per day. The average teenager, I don't have this slide up, but the average teenager has 7 hours a day of combined screen time. meaning they're sitting at the computer, watching something on the computer, as they're watching something on television, as they pull out their cell phone and do something, 7 hours of combined screen time, and that's an average teenager. It's amazing, and it's no wonder somebody's competing for that attention. By the way, parents, teenagers are still very susceptible. Their mind is still developing. And if somebody can get them at that age, they will have them the rest of their lives. And I will say this, I didn't have this in my notes. I was going to say it at the end, but I'll say it now. Think about this. We're in a day and age that we've never experienced before. And we as parents and teachers and pastors and educators and adults are just now learning how to use these ourselves properly, how to control our time and balance our lives. And if we don't even have it done properly, how can we trust that a 6th, 7th, or 8th grader can do it properly themselves? We're putting the onus on them to train themselves in an area that we ourselves can't train in. That's a scary thought, by the way, about where the future is headed. That was free. That wasn't part of my message. So this competition after that red space, this competition drives them to go after your instinctive brain rather than your cognitive brain. What does that mean? Think of it this way. They're going to hone in on your deepest, most base emotions, what you might call your animal instincts as human beings. They go after that rather than the rational, thought processing, reasoning side of your brain. They go after what makes you impulsive and instinctive. How do they do that? They go after these deeper base emotions, such as these are the four top emotions that these companies go after. And by the way, if you're anything like me, as I was putting this together, you're going, holy cow, I remember looking at this and feeling this way. I remember looking at this and feeling this way. And these are the four basic emotions that these companies are going after in order to catch your attention. They want to grab your attention. The first one that they use is sadness. They try and generate some form of sympathy or sadness inside an individual. By the way, this is one of the top ones they go after with female viewers, because females in general are more emotional than males, and so they go after sadness. They want to break your heart, like the animal ads you see on television. If they can go after your heart and break your heart, they'll make you feel sympathy and they'll grab your attention and make you dwell on it and think about it. And that's their goal. Their goal is to make you dwell on it and think about it. The second emotion they go after is fear. You think about all the political ads that are out there. They make you afraid of what the future holds. They make you fear something bad is about to happen. And that's what they go after. This is a big one with news companies. They go after fear. And the last one that I'm going to share with you is the other one that they go after the most. But they go after fear, trying to make you scared about something. Because if they can make you worry, they can grab your attention. Because those of us who worry, which I'm sure nobody else here has that issue, but those of us who do worry and dwell on things in a worrying manner, once it gets in your head, you have a really hard time getting it out. And so they make you try and worry. The third one that they have is shock and surprise. She is adorable, yes. I have no clue who she is. It was one I found on the internet. But they go after shock and surprise. Shock value. If they can shock you, they'll make you dwell on it and think about it. And the last one is actually the most powerful. It is the single most used tactic by social media networks. And it is one of the most dangerous. Anger. If they can get you fired up about something, they'll get you to read an article, they'll get you to share it, and they'll get you to dwell on it. As a matter of fact, these companies who are spending billions of dollars to make you feel this way focus on anger more than any, because people spend more time with angry posts than they do about anything else. You think about those political ads that I was talking about. One post about Donald Trump in a negative or a positive light incites more outrage than anything else on the internet right now. Because if it's a negative post, his supporters get upset, and the people that agree with it get fired up because of it, and it goes the other way around as well. One political post about Donald Trump can turn the world angry, the United States angry. And it works so well because that's what people share. That's what people comment on. That's what gets reposted and retweeted. Because once it gets the ball rolling, it gets you fired up and you can't take it anymore. And so you've got to say something. They play on your anger. It is their biggest weapon in social media. They spend billions of dollars to make you feel sad, fearful, shocked, and angry. Given the choice, they would actually put something, they had the choice between putting something calm and soothing in front of you and one of these, they would pick one of these every single time. They don't want you calm and soothed because when you're calm and soothed, you don't share, you don't comment, you don't post, you don't retweet, you just leave it because you're comfortable with it. They spend billions of dollars to make you feel bad. And then we pay. And then we pay to feel this way. We pay with our time, we pay with our energy, and we even pay with our money. We purchase apps, we purchase video games, and they're designed to make you feel bad. I was sitting with a teenager a couple weeks ago, and I was talking to him, and he was talking about online gaming. And he plays this game online, and he said, he made the comment, "I love the game." And then within 2 minutes, he said, "I get so frustrated when I'm playing it because people just talk rude. They use curse words. They're mean to everybody. I feel like I'm getting picked on all the time and bullied all the time." And I looked at him and I said, I made that comment. You're paying money to feel that way. How does that make any sense to you? But we as adults do it all the time. We pay money for apps and movies and shows and things that actually end up inciting these feelings. And we pay to feel this way. It's scary. Why does it work? How does it get us sucked in? So think about this. Back when we were kids, which seems like such a long time ago now, 2 years ago, it didn't seem like it was that long ago. Now, it seems like it's that long ago. Back when we were kids, there was natural stopping points that we had in our lives. Technology has successfully removed all the built-in stops that we used to have. So, think of it this way. We would go outside and play as kids. And the sun would go down. And what happens? When the sun goes down, you need to be inside the house. It was the rule. When you were kids, when it got dark, you went inside. It didn't matter what time of the day it was. If it was summer, we got to stay out later because it wasn't dark. A natural stopping point happened. When it's dark, we're done doing this and we're going to go inside and do that. Think about newspapers. Newspapers, I know, newspapers were things that you would unfold and open up and read articles out of. And it's unheard of in today's day and age. But you'd have newspapers, at least comics, the comic section for some of us might not have been the rest of it, but what happened? You got to the end of the page, or you got to the end of the article, or you finished the whole paper, and what'd you do? You folded it up, and you set it aside. Some of our grandparents saved 8 million of them in their basement. Some of them, they just went in the trash right away, but once you finished reading it, you were done. Once you finished the crossword puzzle, you put it away. It was over. It was a natural stopping point. How about this one? It used to be that you would sit down at night and watch a television show with your family. And when that show was over, it was your favorite show. You loved it. When that show was over, you had to wait a whole week to watch the next episode. It was insane. You couldn't just sit there and binge watch. You had to wait a whole week. Once the show was over, it was a natural stopping point. You couldn't watch anymore. You were done. And so you waited till the next week. Because most of the time, two shows don't come on back to back that are any decent. So if you found one, that was probably it. You were done. You finished and you moved on. However, these natural stopping points were points where companies realized they're losing their most valuable resource. These natural stopping points were points where all of these major companies said, I am losing their attention. And so we have to do something about that. We've got to figure out how to regain their attention. So, and I might have this order wrong on how this happened, but it's a good example. So just go along with me, even if you know different than I do. So technology is moving along in the past few years. And YouTube came along. And YouTube was awesome. They had viewers' attention. You would watch a video, and then you'd probably move on and do something else. Well, they got tired of losing the attention of their customers, so they came up with this thing called autoplay, where it would randomly select or select based on types of things you were interested in, and after the video ended that you were watching, it would pop up the next video automatically and start playing. What'd they do? They have successfully got rid of the stop where your attention breaks. And so they began garnering market share of attention. And it was awesome because their stock was rising, people loved it, and they were grabbing teenagers as well as young adults and older adults. They were grabbing their attention and holding it. And before you know it, they would spend 3 hours just binge watching YouTube videos of all sorts of junk. And that's what most of it is, by the way. Except for the Bible Baptist Church YouTube channel. Autoplay that all day long. So this autoplay feature began aggravating all of these other companies who want your attention. And so Netflix said, okay, we've got to get our market share back of attention. We've got to get them. And so what they did was they started playing the next episodes automatically in shows, which ended up with teenagers spending 7 and 8 hours binge-watching entire seasons of television shows. They have successfully garnered attention. Facebook couldn't have anything to do with that, so they began playing their videos automatically within the wall. And as you scroll down through your wall, which I have mine shut off, there is a way you can do that. I have mine shut off. But as you scroll down through Facebook, the videos automatically play. So what happens? Well, I'll watch a couple seconds of it. And then you watch a couple more seconds. And then you scroll down and there's another one that plays and they've got your attention. And so they keep battling these companies in order to get your attention. But it doesn't stop with just these three companies. It's all over the place. You think about it. Think about all the apps that are out there that give you streaks. If you do this for so long, you get a streak and you get badges and you get nothing. In all honesty, you get nothing. Daily bonuses. If you visit this app every single day, you get bonuses for doing so. Well, what happens? They have successfully manipulated your emotions to make you feel bad if you break a streak. It's gotten teenagers to the point... It's gotten teenagers to the point that they will hand out their usernames and passwords to 5 and 6 different friends when they go on vacation and have their friends keep their streaks alive for them. If they're willing to give away a username and password, what else are they willing to give away? How scary of a thought is that? What information of yours do they have, parents? Just saying, you might want to be careful. They make you feel as if they literally make you feel like you're a loser. You lose if you don't come back and visit us every day. You lose if you break your Snapchat streak with this person. By the way, parents, I'm going to go ahead and go off on a tangent. I have not gone on one yet, so it's my turn. How many of you know how Snapchat was created, the reasoning behind why Snapchat was created? The entire reason it was created was so people could cheat on their spouses without them getting found out. That's the entire purpose behind Snapchat. And yet, we go ahead and just hand it to our teenagers who still have no control over their hormones and emotions, and say, here, go for it. Are you kidding me? And listen, I know some great teenagers sitting in this room. But when it comes to the flesh, I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them. And I've got two tears in my rotator cuff right now. I have to have surgery on. So it's not going to be very far that I could throw any of them except for probably Moffitt. I could chuck him into next week with the torn rotator cuff. Listen, we turn them loose and we give them, it literally is open season for them. There is no way for you as a parent to check up on that. It's gone. Now, I will say this, on the flip side, it's never gone from the internet, teenagers. Everything you post is captured. And it can come back to haunt you. But it disappears from parents. It disappears from people that can do something about it in their lives. I don't know hardly any adults that are mature enough to handle something like that. I would never put Snapchat on my phone because I know what the flesh is capable of. And there is no way I'm going to hide something from that woman right there. And yet we'll let our teenagers do it all they want. Come on, parents. That's just scary. These companies make you feel like you lose something if you break your Snapchat streak or whatever, your daily bonuses, whatever it is. They make you feel as if you've lost something. In our current culture, this is one of my favorite slides. Here we go. Technology has crossed a line. It has crossed a line from changing what we do to changing who we are. It has changed our identities. Things that were completely inappropriate 10 years ago are now acceptable norms. Let me give you an example. You go back to that slide that I showed you in that control room, and you see a bunch of people in that room, and let's say the boss, the big boss, CEO, comes in to have a meeting with those people. And during that time, these guys are listening to the meeting, and they're sitting there, and you've got 12 of them shopping on their Amazon account in the middle of the meeting. And it's perfectly acceptable. It's okay. I'm going to check my text while I'm preaching. Just go ahead and sit there. You do what you want to do, and I'm going to go ahead and take care of business. You have people who will sit in a church service and get on Facebook Messenger or post something on their wall or be on Instagram. Completely socially unacceptable 10 years ago. And yet, in today's culture, it's okay to socialize during a sermon. It's okay to check your shopping cart during a business meeting. It has become a skill set that employers look for that somebody can text while maintaining eye contact with them. It has become important. That is where our society has come with technology. I need you to be able to text while you're looking me in the eye. Now, how many of you can do that besides me? I knew it was going to be all... I got two adults, but the rest are teenagers. I figured it. It's a skill set. It's become something employers look for. What has happened is we have become a generation who has decided what's important to us. We decide what we want to spend our attention on. We figure that we can focus our attention on the small things that apply to us during a sermon. And when he's speaking about something that I don't think applies to me, I can go ahead and hop on and do something quick. I can divide my attention and control where my attention goes. It has come to the point that we expect more from technology and less from other human beings. We have become lonely in the midst of technology. We are afraid of intimacy. We have turned to technology to give us an illusion of companionship without the demands placed on us with an actual friendship. We like to feel that we're in control. But if you haven't figured it out by now, you're not in control. We have lost control. Technology has crossed the line of changing what we do to changing who we are. I'm going to read out of 1 Kings chapter 19 here. I know, it's all set up. I'm getting there. It's like a half hour of setup and like 5 minutes of a sermon, I promise. I'm almost there. It'll be 3 points and we're out of here. In 1 Kings 19, verse 9, the Bible says, "And he came thither unto a cave." This is Elijah when he's running from Jezebel. And he goes, God sustains him and sends him to Mount Oreb. And he gets there, and in verse 9 it says, "And he came thither into a cave and lodged there, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said unto him, What doest thou here, Elijah? And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel had forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." By the way, which is a great message on being discouraged over nothing, because there was some 4,000 other prophets. "And he said, Go forth, and stand upon the mount before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by. And a great and strong wind rent the mountains, and brake in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice." When I think about all of the things competing for our attention today, the news media, social media, technology, televisions, movies, children. It doesn't have to be limited to technology things. Satan has mastered the distraction. And he's going after your attention hard. And to be honest with you, as I think about all these things, it sounds to me a lot like a lot of wind, a lot of earthquakes, and a lot of fire. And what has happened because of all the technology, because of all the distractions, because of all the battling for your attention, we have lost, as a culture, the still small voice of the Lord. One of my favorite verses, Miss Katie basically sang about it, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth." In our rush to connect with more and more people, we begin to isolate ourselves from our God. We need to refocus our attention and reestablish our divine connection. So, how do we do this? How do we reestablish our divine connection? I'm going to give you 3 points. I'm putting them all on the screen so you can see them. Hopefully, Brother Keith will catch a snapshot if you need it on YouTube. Again, autoplay that all day long. Just do a search for Bible Baptist Latrobe, Bible Church Latrobe. We'll come up. You'll find us YouTube channel and spend your hours binge watching that. If you're going to spend 2.5 hours of screen time a day, that's probably a good way to do it. I'm just saying. I'm going to keep marketing because if they can do it for their stuff, I should be able to do it for our stuff, right? 3 points. Number one, by the way, this is super simple. I'm not giving you any, it's practical, and I'm not giving you anything that's like so deep that, oh my goodness, he's like a genius. No, this is surface. It'll show you how shallow I really am. It's that simple. But man, is it hard to do. Number one, acknowledge that your attention is being fought for. Acknowledge. Number one, acknowledge. Your attention is being fought for. You are persuadable. As much as you think you're in control, you're probably not. Here's a test for you. Shut off all technology for 4 solid days in your home. 4 days. That's it. 1% of the entire year. And we can't do it. We struggle. We don't control it. It controls us. And the idea behind this message is to help you find that balance in your life. Listen, I'm all for technology. I told you that at the beginning. The idea of this message is to try and find the balance, because the issue is we are losing God by replacing Him with technology. So that really the idea behind the sermon is getting God back in our lives. Acknowledge your attention is being fought for, that you are persuadable, and that you need to be still. You need those times to connect with God. Deuteronomy 4:24 says, "For the Lord thy God is a consuming fire, even a jealous God. His righteous jealousy wants your attention." He wants you to pay attention to Him. I remember when my children, all of them, have done this when they were young. Come here, Derek. Ready? Here we go. I'll shout. Hopefully social media can pick it up. When my children were young, they'd come up and sit on my lap. And then they would do this. They wanted, for those of you over there, they would do this. They wanted my attention. And so they literally, you can sit down. They literally grab my face and turn it to them and draw it in so they could talk to me. God doesn't do that. But man, He wants your attention just as badly. He wants you to pay attention to Him. Social media, games, apps, friends, family, television, Satan, everything that the world has to offer is battling for your attention. And you need to acknowledge at some point that God needs your attention more than the rest of that stuff does. And you need to give God that attention more than you need the rest of that stuff. You have to acknowledge the priority. You have to acknowledge that your attention is being fought for, that you're persuadable, and that you need to be still. The second thing I'm going to give you this morning, I told you the sermon part would be quick. Act. I know, really tough. Steve, I told you. Act. Schedule yourself some quiet time. Some of us like to call it a prayer closet. Some of us like to call it, you know, just alone time with God. Whatever you want to call it, schedule it. Get up and spend some time alone and quiet. And be still. And let God work in your life. Create no tech spaces in your home. If you go into our home, we do. We've got a television in the living room. I know for some Christians that's like, we have a television in the living room. I even pay for cable so that I can watch the Pens get crushed. What in the world? That was awful. We have cable at home. I've got internet access in my house. I have iPads at my home that I allow my kids to use. But there are no tech spaces in our home. By the way, every single one of my kids' bedrooms is a no tech space. Remember all those emotions that I was talking about that happen with these companies? You put them alone in a room and let them feel those emotions coming all over them as their mind and emotions are developing. Imagine what happens. Imagine the grasp that Satan can get on somebody if they can continually play on any of those emotions. The sadness. You wonder why we have depressed teenagers. Why our suicide rate is so high with teenagers. It's because we give them blanket access and say, here, go to your room with this and watch videos. All of those emotions come back. There should be no tech spaces in your home. And there should also be, you should replace screen time with FaceTime. We, no matter how busy it is, when we sit down for dinner as a family, there is no technology. I answer my phone for two people. And that's it. My mom, I'm a pastor. When I'm sitting at the dinner table, that's it. No one else. There's no internet. There's no surfing the web. There's nothing. I replace screen time with FaceTime when it comes to lunchtime or dinner time. There has to be some test. And you go, listen, I get it. I'm going to be longer than I thought. I get it. You think I can't do it. There's no way possible that I can do this. I'm going to give you something. How many of you have ever heard of the phrase dog fooding? Sweet, not one of you. That's awesome. Dog fooding is a business industry term, mostly geared towards sales. It comes from a guy who used to own, he was a major, he owned a pet food company. And when he would walk into meetings with investors, he would walk in eating a can of dog food. And his reasoning behind it was this: if it's good enough for me, it's good enough for your dog. Guy got rich off of it. And it caught on as a sales pitch. How many of you go, man, if the owner uses that product, I'm behind it. If this celebrity uses that product, I'm all for it. And you kind of get caught up in, if it's good enough for the owner, it's good enough for me. I'm okay with that. And in every industry in the world, that works except the technology industry. Two examples. Steve Jobs, when he first created the iPad and released it, said, "This is the greatest browsing experience you will ever have. This thing is better than any laptop or tablet ever created on the face of the earth. You will be changed by using this." And he was right beyond any belief, but that's besides the point. 2 months later, he was approached by a New York Times journalist. And they were chatting and doing a news article. And the journalist asked him, he said, "Man, how do your kids like the iPad?" To Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs, creator of the iPad, owner of Apple, he looked at the journalist and said, "My children have never seen an iPad. We limit their technology at home." Second example. How many of you have ever heard of the Waldorf School? Superman. Teaching all kinds of stuff today, apparently. The Waldorf School is a very exclusive school. They have a location right in the middle of Silicon Valley. And that location, tuition is $24,000 per year per student. Makes me want to raise prices here, I'll tell you that much. $24,000 per year per student. 75% of the students that go there come from executives of technology companies. 75% of their students. They do not introduce a screen to their students until 8th grade. 8th grade is where they feel they can begin introducing screens to their children. These are major technology people. We've gone dog fooding. We look for people who really back their products, and that's what we buy. And yet, technology companies, they don't even purchase their own stuff. That's scary. It reminds me, by the way, this point, act, reminds me of the prodigal son. In Luke chapter 15, verse 20, the story of the prodigal son, he runs away from home and he sits there and he acknowledges, in the pig pen, he acknowledges, "I've got an issue, I need to change things." But it wasn't until he acted on it. Verse 20 says, "And he arose." So I can tell you all day long. I can give you all kinds of hints and tips and things to do to try and help your home. And that's really what I'm doing, is trying to help your home. But unless you act on it, unless you get up and do it, nothing will ever change. That's actually where most Christianity has its issues. We know, we just don't do. So acknowledge, act, and then lastly, accountability. Have a friend, spouse, somebody that will always tell you the truth. Be transparent with your actual usage and listen even to the boring bits. When you're in a sermon, beginning to end, listen to the whole thing. When you're in a business meeting, beginning to end, listen to the whole thing. And have somebody keep you accountable with it. Be transparent with your usage. Proverbs, so many verses in Proverbs, "Rather it is no counsel that people fall, but in a multitude of counselors there is safety. For by wise counsel thou shalt make thy war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend." So many verses talk about being accountable to each other and being okay when somebody tells us we're in the wrong. Do you have somebody that keeps you accountable? My phone, I leave it lay around my house all the time. My wife can get in it anytime she wants. My children can get in it anytime they want. What do we have to hide that we can't hand our phone over to the pastor? That we can't hand over our phone to our parents? To a teacher? Who's keeping you accountable? Acknowledge, act, and accountability. As I close this morning, I just want to go back to this slide. I want to ask you one question. With all that spare time you've got, outside of work and sleep and survival, how much time is God actually getting out of your life? How much of your attention does he have? So stand with our heads bowed and eyes closed.